Welcome on into the 8 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you until 10 o'clock each and every weeknight here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Braves and Brewers are underway. Oren, if I give you one guess, are the Braves winning or losing this game right now?
Losing.
You would be correct, sir. On their way to 18 games under 500. To talk about that and a whole lot more, all things MLB, let's welcome in our buddy Rowan Kavner of Fox Sports MLB. Rowan, let's start here in Atlanta. Unfortunately, the season is nothing short of a complete dumpster fire at this point. Are you surprised at the deadline they were not more active one way or the other?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't sell more. And I think, you know, obviously, the first half went about as bad as it possibly could have gone, but it went bad enough that it was hard at that point to envision, you know, anything really happening in the second half to go on. I know they've been on magical runs before, but it was hard to see that with this group, with the pitching injuries that happened. And so you think, all right, there's not going to be a lot of seasons, you would hope, that look like this. This is a chance to bolster a farm system maybe that could use some more help for sure. You start going through the pieces now and you look at who the rentals are and the way that Ozuna's been, you know, struggling and banged up and the season Iglesias has had, you know, sure. Like there's probably not a whole lot out there that you're going to get for that, but to not do really anything to help your future. I was surprised by that.
Speaking of the future, is there any scenario in which you foresee the Braves bringing back their longtime Braves lifer, honestly, Brian Snicker?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting topic and conversation, and obviously he could make that decision easy for everyone if he decides, you know, to retire, which is, I think, a possibility, a likelihood, you know, whatever you want to call it there. And that's an easy way for everyone to kind of just start fresh. You know, if he decides I don't want to stop, that obviously creates a uncomfortable situation for a guy that's, you know, had these big successes with this team. I wouldn't count on it happening that he's back next year, like if it were just me guessing here. But you know, if he decides he wants to continue, that's going to be an uncomfortable spot. Cause, and again, as bad as this year's been, you know, the way last year ended wasn't great. They haven't gone back to the CS since they won the World Series in 21. This is an extended stretch. And you know, obviously winning a World Series can buy you time. But when you're talking about 3-4 years of not getting to where you hope to go again, I think it's no surprise that you're wondering what might be next. And man, if this is not rock bottom, that's a problem.
Two players to keep an eye on for their future long-term here. Michael Harris obviously has been turning it around as of late. We hope that this is the guy he's going to be. Do you think he still has superstar potential? And then Ozzie Albies has kind of fallen off a cliff out of nowhere, Rowan. Do you think they should exercise his $7 million option in the offseason?
Yeah, I am still a Michael Harris believer. And I don't know about superstar potential because, you know, I don't know where the ceiling is offensively, but I do know that what he gives you defensively provides a nice baseline. And again, you said it, you're starting to kind of see the turnaround that you wish you could have seen, you know, 2 months ago and when, you know, the season was at least still the possibility of maybe turning things around, but it's nice to see it happening at some point. I still believe in Michael Harris. The Albies thing is tough. And man, we've talked for years about, wow, this is one of the most incredible contracts. And now you're in a situation where, is it worth even picking it up? It's kind of crazy to think we're at this point, but when you're, you know, not really giving much defensively and you're downturn offensively, the way that we've seen so far. Yeah. I think you got to think about moving on to that position. If I'm looking at this team in 2026, you know, where do they need to upgrade? The middle infield has to be addressed. I mean, they need to figure something out there. I don't think you can get what you're getting out of all of these at second and then have the shortstop position be the worst offensively in baseball, which is what it is right now. You could think about picking that up and hoping he can tap back into what we've seen from him before. If you are able to upgrade at shortstop, if you're not, then I think you got to look at all your options there at second base, but definitely believe more in the future of Michael Harris than what we're seeing right now from Albies.
we know there's a good chance, as we're talking with our buddy Rowan Kavner of Fox Sports MLB, that at least two of the projected starters for next year, and A.J. Smith-Shawver and Grant Holmes, will not be back for the following season. Holmes is going to try to rehab, but if that doesn't work, he'll also need some version of Tommy John surgery, whether it's traditional or the UC brace that a lot of these guys are getting now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's enough out there in the market in the offseason coming that the Braves could fill out sort of their – I would say they probably need 3 through 5 or 4 through 5. Is there enough quality depth out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about, you know, possibly, you know, a 4th, 5th option, I think you can definitely, you know, find that. I'm kind of curious to see how some of these guys end up when you're thinking about, you know, obviously like guys like Zach Gallen ended up staying. I think Framber's going to be a huge someone that a lot of people are going to really, really want. So when you're not having, though, to get necessarily a 1 or 2, you need depth. You just need pieces that is out there. You can go find a 3rd or a 4th or a 5th, you know, starter. A lot of this is going to depend though on, you know, what version of Strider do you have? What version of Schwellenbach do you have? What happens with Chris Sale at 37? So as much of a question as there is with, you know, Grant Holmes and, you know, as you mentioned, I think you need to upgrade somewhere at starting pitcher just to build some more depth. I would expect to see some depth options added there. But I do think, you know, if Strider can kind of find his way, that still provides some optimism. We know, you know, if Schwellenbach's healthy, what he can do as well. So that's a nice starting spot. But yeah, that group definitely, I think, needs to add some depth.
When it comes to the state of the bullpen, Rowan, it might be even worse than the rotation. To me, there's maybe 1 or 2 guys they would look to bring back. Do you think it's possible? I mean, I'm sure we see 1 or 2 examples of it every year, but is it possible to rebuild an entire back end of the bullpen in one off season?
I mean, we've seen 2 New York teams rebuild the bullpen in a deadline. So, I think that position is so volatile from year to year. I think that's doable. Yeah, I would feel a whole lot better about being able to do that, you know, than having to, you know, go have to find another ace or something like that. I think it is, you know, doable. Do I think they're going to go splurge to go fix that? No. But you look at a team, like I think about, like, you know, the Rangers, who their bullpen was just terrible, and you make enough moves kind of at the margins that you get a good season from 1 or 2 of these guys and you can kind of be able to fix that. So I do think, you know, that is a spot, that is a group, a unit that is easier to fix than some. If you can add, you know, 2 or 3 arms that you trust, I think that's possible. But that, yeah, when I look at what this team needs to do in 2026 to get back on track, they need to fix the back end of the bullpen. They need to look at the middle infield. And I think those things are doable, and I think bullpen's a little bit easier to look at than you know, trying to find a shortstop, because I think everyone would like an elite one of those.
You mentioned teams that were successful during the trade deadline. Who were your biggest winners and maybe a couple of losers, teams that needed to add a punch but didn't?
Yeah, I think, you know, I look at the Mariners. Clearly, they needed more pop at first base and third base, and they get arguably the two of the best options for both of those positions with Suarez and Naylor, and I think you could look at that team and at least make an argument that that's the most stacked roster in the American League. So that's a big winner for me. I don't know that there was a team that needed a position more than the Phillies needed a closer, and they go out and get arguably the best one available in Duran, and he's really just kind of lifted the spirits of that group really quickly. I think that was a huge add. And then I would have said, you know, I look at the Mets and Yankees and think, wow, those two teams are what they did with the bullpen. That's, you know, incredible work. And then it has not gone the way the Yankees would have hoped with that group so far. But yeah, again, you know, relief units are volatile. I expect over the long haul, getting those guys will be, you know, a big help. And now I'm just curious to see what happens with the Padres, who had a lot of areas to upgrade, and they decided we're just going to upgrade all of them. I mean, A.J. Preller at the deadline, it's like a bull in a china shop. And I'm just glad that he's a character in this universe as someone who just covers the sport, because it makes July 31st a whole lot more exciting. You never know, you know, how much of the farm he's going to leverage. And he said, dude, we have a chance. Let's go for it. and you think, wow, you're giving up the whole future to go do this. But somehow we say that every year. They're all in. They're putting all their chips in. And then the next year happens, they give up the farm, and they're able to do it again. So that was exciting. Obviously, they're better now. They have to leverage a lot of their future to do that. Those are the teams that kind of stand out to me. We mentioned the Braves as a team that I thought needed to do some more, but you know, they didn't have a ton of pieces to be able to go do that. I think the Cubs not getting and look, if you were a team that needed relief pitching, you were in a lot of luck at this deadline. If you were a team that needed a starting pitcher, a guy you could really trust in October, that was a lot harder. And so I look at a team like the Cubs. They have 1 year with Kyle Tucker. They're right there at the, near the top of the Central, one of the best teams in the National League, I think the most dynamic offense. And I thought they could have used another ace. They weren't able to get that. I would have said the Red Sox as well, a team that I thought could have paired someone with Crochet. If they were able to give up enough. They weren't able to do a whole lot at the deadline. And then another NL Central team, the Brewers, who doesn't seem to matter because they just keep winning with whoever's out there. But I thought they could have tried to add some pop. I thought Suarez would have been a really good candidate. They have more pitchers than they know what to do with. That would have been a good match, I thought, for Arizona. They weren't able to do that. We'll see if that matters. Clearly, for regular season purposes, it doesn't. But this is a team that hasn't done a whole lot in the postseason. I thought they could have used another power bat, and they weren't able to get that.
When it comes to what's going on in Cleveland with this gambling situation, what do you make of all that?
It's not great. It's troubling. I'm not sure that it's like necessarily hugely shocking that we're seeing players get involved with this. But when you're talking about, you know, some players on the fringes, it's one thing. When you're talking about one of the best closers in the game, it's not great. And when you see these kind of, what do they call, micro bets or prop bets or whatever, where you're talking about, you know, betting on one pitch or something like that, where these guys could do that and it doesn't even affect the outcome of the game. I think that becomes more tempting, more tantalizing. And obviously we don't know all the specifics yet, but it's clearly not good. That was obviously a player that at the deadline would have been really interesting for a lot of teams, but just take that out of it. Who knows when he's going to be able to pitch again? And who knows, you know, where this ends? It seems like with at least Cleveland that those are the only two guys, you know, impacted. But they got to find a way to curb this in player, you know, with player betting. But I don't know how you necessarily do that when sports betting is such a huge part of the game right now.
So as we look towards the playoffs here, you mentioned the Yankees. They get Aaron Judge back. Do you feel like they have enough firepower? You mentioned the additions that they made, unfortunately, when thrust into action, not exactly lighting it up so far. But they did. They were a World Series team last year. Yeah. Do you think they can get back?
I think the American League is just so wide open that if Judge can, I mean, just, it's still so much of this is just Judge's health. I mean, he's back tonight. Like, if Judge is in peak form and able to come back from the arm injury and look like himself, they're going to have a chance. And the American League is so wide open. I mean, you're looking at the Tigers, who didn't do a ton of the deadline and had kind of been trending the wrong way. I mean, actually, they did a ton of the deadline. They didn't do a lot of impact moves at the deadline, though. The Blue Jays have been a huge story. But, I think that top of the AL East is still kind of open for anyone. The Red Sox have been super hot, but also didn't really do a whole lot at the deadline to help themselves. And then you have the Astros, who are just completely banged up, and the Mariners, who I think, again, I would say are probably the most talented roster in the American League, but, you know, are they able to kind of put it together, and are those offensive pieces going to take a step back at T-Mobile Park? We don't really know yet. We got to see. So I think just because there's no clear cut, this is for sure the team to beat is definitely better than the Yankees. I think they still have a shot. You still have Fried and Rodon at the top of that rotation. The offense is still really, really powerful. It's been the best in baseball all year. They are 25-31 since the start of June. That's not great. They're playing really sloppy, but if they can fix some of that, they still have the talent to, I think, get where they want to go.
All right, before I let you go, in the NL, if I gave you the Brewers and let's say the Dodgers or the field, what would you take right now?
To win the World Series?
To make the World Series.
Oh, to make the World Series. That's a good question. I think because the Dodgers still have to be the favorites, I would probably still go that direction. You know, the Brewers are so interesting because I think it's incredible what they've done, but again, they haven't really shown in the postseason that that can translate yet. I don't necessarily trust that's going to be, you know, a team that's going to go make a huge deep October run. They are the best team in baseball right now. I think I'd be, you know, more afraid of the Cubs, Phillies, and Mets. I think the Cubs have the most dangerous offense in the National League right now, and you know, the Phillies and the Mets are capable of going on a run here, and that Phillies rotation is as scary as it gets, you know, in the National League. So that's a great question. I think I would lean the Dodgers way, but man, that team hasn't looked the way that you want it to. I think that at least if you're a Dodgers fan, I think, you know, they're kind of banking on all these guys coming back in the second half, either healthier or better. But you had a lot of down years offensively. You got, you know, Mookie Betts is still trying to figure it out. Teoscar Hernandez has been banged up. They get Blake Snell back. I still think that's the team to beat right now. But it's wide open. I mentioned it's wide open in the American League. It's wide open in the National League too. Like, there's no clear cut, really, really, really great team that sort of stands above everyone else. And so I think it'll make for a really fun fight to the finish here.
Rowan, appreciate the time as always. We'll chat soon and we'll check you out at Fox Sports.
All right, guys.
All right, that is Rowan Kavner there. When we get back, what did Bijan Robinson have to say after practice? And also, AJ Terrell sat down exclusively right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A big Falcons 8 o'clock hour coming your way. Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock. Bijan Robinson hit the podium today, and he had a couple of gems I want to let you hear from before we let you hear from AJ Terrell, who joined the radio station today. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. Braves are, what are they doing, Oren? If you had to take a guess.
Losing.
That would be correct. And now they're losing by even more. Now it's 4-0.
Wah, wah. The Joey Wentz effect didn't carry over.
You mean Eric,
this game?
You mean over the last two games they've had to start Eric Fetty and Joey Wentz and it hasn't gone well? What?
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
You mean that's not Strider and Sale? What? Yeah, okay. All right, enough. Let's switch to some positivity and hear from...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Surprise, surprise. Surprise. The Braves stink again. Bijan was talking about Drake London and how he turns into a killer on the field, but he's a puppy off the field.
Drake's a different breed. I just don't understand how he's, like, super nice, you know, outside of the field. And then on the field, like, yeah, he's like a monster. Like, he'll cuss you out. if you get in front of him, if they throw a flag, like, he's going to talk to the ref. He's going to speak. But that's what drives us. Like, his energy, what he brings, like, I feel that. And I'm not going to talk, but in my head, I'm like, yeah, I gotta be on that level with him because he's – he enforces something that we haven't seen before, and Drake can be the nicest guy, but you know, on that field, like he's a scary dude to line up in front of. He's a scary dude to try to take on the block too, because he's gonna try to kill you. But I mean, I love that dude. Like he's one of my best friends, but on the field, he's the best player you want to play with.
And hopefully, he continues. He had a breakout season last year, and hopefully, he just has more of that. I don't think anything we heard there from Bijan is shocking, right? We know Drake's a dog, and his RB1's just backing him up. Now, Oren, I've been waiting all day to hear this one. I haven't listened to it yet on purpose. I heard about this, but I didn't listen because I want to react with y'all in real time. Apparently, Bijan did an impression of offensive coordinator Zach Robinson today, and it's certainly made the rounds. Let's hear it.
No, Zach will like before the drive starts, he'll be like, and it's his little soft voice, man. He'd be like, he's like, you know, you're gonna kill him today. He's like, they can't stop you. And I'm like, yeah, man.
That's a good C-Rob
impression. It is. But yeah, I mean, that's where he's at, and we're all on the same page, and you know, we're gonna continue to drive and feed off of his energy now that what he's bringing. And that's, you know, we can't wait to get started with him when week one comes.
Gonna be honest, Oren. That was fun and cute. The overreaction from the media was just, ugh, and it's so predictable too. I get it. You're standing in front of Bijan Robinson. He's giving you something.
You don't want to make him think.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to make him think.
You're not appreciative of what he's doing
right
now.
Yeah, like, of course you want to encourage all of those sorts of awesome sound bites and stuff, but just the absolute, play that again, because the absolute cackling in the background I thought was a little much.
No, Zach will, like, before the drive starts, he'll be like, and it's his little soft voice, man. He'd be like, he's like, you know, you're gonna kill him today.
I mean, Oren, was that funny? I mean, just, could be honest. I mean, I love everybody out there, Miles and Maria and Allison and Joe and all of our guys.
You starting trouble with Joe Patrick?
Yeah, am I starting a skirmish with Joe P? No, but that was the laughs didn't meet the moment there. You just kind of like that was the type of laughter like the first time you watched like Old School or something like that, where you're just barrel laughing like out loud. I don't know about that. It was nice. It was a fun moment. The next thing he was talking about, a guy who is not fun, a guy who is all business on the field, and that is Matthew Bergeron, a guy you do not want to blank with.
Yeah, it's Drake and Burge. Like, Burge, yeah, like, Burge is, he's bringing it. He's bringing that heat, and he's going to talk to the other team. And I told the guys, like, I was like, don't look at me. I was like, get excited when I make plays on the field, but I'm not going to talk. I'm so quiet. But with him, like, yeah, he's that guy in the huddle where it's just like, you know, when he's turned it on, like we look at him, and then everything changes.
All right. Again, I don't think that's, if you've been listening, watching, judging, those are not surprise answers there, but just further backs up the guys that are the dogs on the Falcons, and will continue to be so. I'm excited. Also excited to hear from A.J. Terrell, the leader of the defensive secondary, along with Jesse Bates. He joined the morning shift this morning exclusively on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This was their chat.
Got to lock in, you know, it's one of them days, one of them dog days, I call it, but, you know, just try to figure out how you're going to, you know, catch the ball with gloves or without, but, you know, at the end of the day, my job is to defend the pass, so, it was smooth for me.
You probably like it when you line up those wide receivers with them slippery hands. I love it. Let's talk a little bit about the offseason. Did you do anything fun? Obviously, hanging out with the family and other things like that, but did you do any traveling, any concerts, any things like that?
I did. I would just say, you know, my daughter, she was newborn, so we didn't really do too much out of the country, but we went to New York and I want to say Florida, LA, do some little kids trips with the kids and take them to Disney World, things like that. Just staying local.
Yeah, love to hear.
Yep.
Hey, AJ, your brother is playing, Avion, is playing at Clemson. Has he asked you for any advice, or what is that relationship like?
Yeah, you know, I'm proud of him. That's what I'm going to start by saying. You know, I'm super proud of him. He definitely has been, you know, holding his own while he's been up there. And, you know, he showed me his clips and stuff. They just started camp, I want to say, 2 days ago. So, you know, he already sending me a lot of clips on where he at, you know, how they going to use him this season, you know, with the new defense coordinator that they have. But, you know, just him showing me the plays and things like that, just getting some info back from me. So he definitely been in connection with me as far as him playing better and what he could, you know, do better. And also, the main thing I was telling him is try to take care of his body. You know, going into your junior year, I just feel like taking care of your body and being consistent is the main thing.
You know, last year we got a chance to catch up with you and talk about Avion. We asked you for prediction on Georgia-Clemson game. You got one for the Clemson-LSU game this year, or you want to keep it close to the vest?
Yeah, I'd probably say, like, 28-14 Clemson.
There you go.
Yeah, 28-14 Clemson.
And just so we're clear, Clemson is the real Death Valley. Is
that clear Death Valley. I can't. I'm gonna be there full attendance. I don't know if I'm gonna be on the sideline or try to go up in the crowd, but probably start off on the sideline probably the first half.
I hear you.
Yep.
I hear you.
Joined by AJ Terrell here on the morning show. All right, you know, actually saw it today. You know, had a nice little pass breakup down in the end zone. How hard is it those moments where maybe you don't locate the ball early, or you might have the receiver might have a step here or there? I know it's rare for the receiver to have a step on you, but to trust your technique and everything you've been taught and not kind of just get handsy there.
Yeah, no panic. Just trying to play technique, like you said. Kind of receiver kind of had to step on me, so I knew I couldn't look back right away. But trusting his eyes, the receiver's eyes, and knowing that the ball was on the way and being able to deflect the pass using his hands so he couldn't catch it.
Now you're an all pro. I mean, you've been an all pro. But it feels like you don't get put on some of these lists that high as up as you should be. Do you kind of use that to motivate you in the offseason to work on some anything that maybe isn't a strength, or do you not try to listen to that outside noise?
No, I definitely don't listen to it, but it's definitely something that you see. You know, we all human. We all on our phones. You definitely see it. But at the end of the day, just controlling what I can and playing at a high level week in, week out is the main thing. So it's starting practice, giving receivers the best look, and me holding myself accountable and to not give up any catches.
Well, speaking of controlling things you control, I'm curious to get your take. And obviously, as media and as fans, a lot of people looked post-bye week, after the bye week last year, you guys going in the stretch run of the season. Obviously, some ups and downs on defense prior to that. But, you know, you play the Minnesota game, other things like that. Were the changes to the defense after the bye week last year, were those overblown to the media and the fans, or did you actually feel that there was a difference in the way you guys were kind of attacking the offenses last year?
Yeah, I say, you know, going into bye week is always a good time during the season with, you know, seeing what our weaknesses was, how we were getting attacked, and having a switch up. And I think we came back that next week, or, you know, that next following game, and was able to play more matchy and be more handsy at the line, and it worked out for us.
Yeah. Do you prefer that uptight coverage right off the line of scrimmage with getting handsy, or do you like to give a little cushion? I mean, what's your preference as a DB?
Yeah, I like to be at the line. I'm more of an in-phase corner. I like to be at the line, and I love to play off too, but definitely like to, you know, be up in the receiver face.
Now, as a DB, when you see two guys taken in the first round that are edge rushers and they bring in Leonard Floyd, how happy do you get? Because that can make your life a lot easier at times.
Yeah, super happy. I feel like, you know, once I heard the draft picks, I couldn't believe it. I'm not even going to sit here and lie. I was super happy. Jalen Walker and James Pierce, definitely somebody that – some of the guys that we, you know, we definitely needed, along with the guys that we already have, and added with Leonard Floyd, you know, DBs in the back end, you couldn't wish none better than a D-line and a rush, and I'm just glad to get to work with those guys.
It's the morning shift, hanging out with AJ Terrell out at Flowery Branch for Falcons training camp. Who are you rooming with out here?
I got Mike Hughes, I got D. Alford, and Clark Phillips.
Did you guys work out who's going to bring the console or anything?
Nah, see, last year we thought about it, you know. I think I want to say D. Alford brought it. This year I brought my own, but I sent it back to the house. I sent it back to the house because I feel like, you know, once you start hitting these dog days at camp, you just want to, you know, close your eyes, go to sleep. You can't really be on the game all night, and so I got it at the house with my son.
Finishing up with AJ Terrell. Last thing before we let you go, we talked to Jesse Bates last week. One of the answers that was more shocking to me was he said that James Pierce gets on the aux sometimes in the locker room. I couldn't believe you guys were allowing a rookie to get on the aux cord in the locker room. But talk to me about what he's playing. Talk to me about what you're listening to in there.
No, I couldn't believe it either. I'm like, y'all, you know, we got rookies changing the music. Yeah. But it was good music, though. You know, you probably think he listens to a lot of rah-rah music, but it's more chill, you know. So he definitely get the guy, everybody being there just bobbing their head all slow and just vibing. And, you know, anytime somebody changed the music in the locker room unexpectedly, everybody look at, you know, yeah, everybody look like, who is it? By the time you look, whoever changed it already beat on walked off. Yeah. So you see who the closest near the tablet. And a few times it's been James, but you know, you can't complain too much about the music. It's been good.
Yeah, that's what Jesse said. He was like, as long as he's getting sacks, I don't care what he's doing.
Getting sacks, music, everything vibing. So I'm one trip.
That is AJ Terrell there. Good stuff with the morning shift. How about more Falcons conversation when we get back? Because new center Ryan Neuzel joined the show today. He joined Dukes and Bell at practice. What does our new starting center have to say about protecting for Michael Penix in the state of what should be a very good offensive line? And Oren, there's a story that just broke in the NFL that's going to change the way we watch games forever. I'll tell you what that is when we get back. Oren Romaine, have you seen the breaking news coming from the NFL media world?
Do tell, sir. Do tell.
Okay, it is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10. This just coming down. ESPN to acquire NFL Network and other media assets from the NFL. You want some more detail?
I love details.
Okay, here we go. Four bullet points. The ESPN/NFL deal combines America's most popular sporting league and the world's most innovative sports media leader. Okay, doesn't really tell us much, but ESPN will own and operate NFL Network, providing fans enhanced access to 24/7 coverage of the sport they love. Now, Oren, here's my first question. Who is airing these programs? Like, is it going to be Dan Orlovsky and Mina Kimes? Or is, you know, our Mike Yam and, you know, some of our other friends at NFL Network?
There's going to be Maurice Jones-Drew
Cynthia Freeland and some of our other friends at NFL. Like, does this mean ESPN will now be staffing NFL Network products and NFL Network people are SOL here? I don't know.
All of these mergers, man, they just make things so confusing.
Third bullet point. The NFL will continue to own and produce NFL Red Zone and distribute it digitally through NFL Plus. ESPN will now distribute NFL Red Zone on traditional television. Okay. So does that mean the ESPN version is free with commercials if you have ESPN? Does that mean that ESPN is going to offer its own Red Zone behind a paywall? Like, what does that mean?
Just one fee gets you everything now?
I know ESPN is launching their new app for $29.99 a month. Does that come with Red Zone?
If you're paying $30 a month, it better come with Red Zone.
And finally, NFL Fantasy Football will merge with ESPN Fantasy Football, creating a best-in-class product for fans everywhere.
See, then again, you have ESPN fantasy staffers, and then you have NFL fantasy staffers.
Well, that one might be so big that they need to just keep everybody. You're talking about millions of users.
Keep them separated?
Or just keep everybody employed. If it's all under one umbrella. The one that really strikes me is, like, if NFL Network is going to be a thing that continues to exist, but ESPN owns and operates it, how are they going to do the programming? Like, ESPN already has, what, NFL Live?
A lot of dedicated NFL programming, network programming.
Yeah,
yes.
NFL Live every
NFL
day.
Sunday.
NFL Sunday Countdown. NFL Network has its own Sunday pregame
morning show, yeah,
with Rich Eisen and Coach and Michael Irvin. Although I don't know if he'll be back after the year he's had.
And then you have the you got the Peyton and Eli, those broadcasts Omaha production stuff now.
Man, this is crazy. It's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out. So again, ESPN is acquiring NFL Network and other media assets from the NFL. But Oren, as predicted, kind of vague. Kind of vague in terms of...
It's vague right now because they probably have no idea the scope and the breadth, if you will, of everything that's going to happen right now. So we'll just keep it purposely vague.
The NFL will continue to own and produce NFL Red Zone and distribute it digitally through NFL Plus. ESPN will now distribute NFL Red Zone on traditional television. So to me, that sounds like ESPN is going to have a commercial-filled version of NFL Red Zone instead of 7 hours of commercial-free football.
Oh, great. Just so people love Red Zone interrupted by commercials.
Imagine being in charge. Imagine being the producer of that broadcast and trying to time that out.
You can't.
How could you?
And then you'd have to come back in the first 3 minutes of whenever you came back from commercial break would just be everything that was missed.
Unless they do it like sidebar advertising.
Just kind of put it in the window.
Yeah.
Maybe. That's not a bad thing.
And maybe just mute the host for 30 seconds at a time. Like, still show the action on the field, but get the VO of the commercial in there. So you don't have to actually break away from the broadcast. It's all very interesting. All right, we shall see. Again, that is big news coming down just in the last 15 minutes or so. Ryan Nuziel did join Dukes and Bell earlier today. I want you to hear that conversation. He was on with the boys after practice.
Dukes and Bell with Ryan Nuziel, our starting center for the Atlanta Falcons. We've not had a chance to really visit with you, man. I mean, we've been talking about you a lot. Right. You got a lot of playing time last year, and I think, you know, obviously that played a role in them seeing you as the guy. Talk about that experience, man, because we weren't talking about you, which meant there was no fall off when you were in there last season.
No, it was good. I mean, starting the year as a backup, obviously you have to be ready for any events that happen, anything that goes down. So I got called on, and I was fortunate enough just to be able to fill the role for the time being, and I was very fortunate just to keep things rolling.
And congratulations on the contract, by the way, 2-year extension. What's been the hardest part, or when you jumped in last year, was it just finding chemistry with Bergeron and Lindstrom?
Yeah, the hardest thing is that first game. You kind of get thrown in the fire, like, was it 2-minute drill versus the Chiefs for me? So that's always the hardest part. But then you get down to like the week prep and you really hone in just on all the looks and just getting all the reps. And it definitely makes it a lot easier week by week.
Ryan, when you go in a situation like that, everybody got crazy eyes, right? They're looking around. You run in a huddle. Get your mind right, right? They're looking at you like you're crazy. Is that how it goes?
No, I probably had the crazy eyes. I mean, you just got to kind of flip the switch from just kind of keeping your head ready, like spectating the game and then just throwing in right away on like those situations. You just got to stay ready.
Fans don't pay enough attention to offensive line, but Jake Matthews was talking about it and saying, you know, Ryan Nuziel, you got to do all the – there's a lot of responsibility that comes to being the center.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with just like IDing the front and just getting everyone on the same page, kind of just reacting to what the defense gives us and presents and then just working on that.
Can you give us an example? You are walking up to the line and the first thing you see and you say is –
I mean, it changes every time, so it's no real thing. But it depends. Run, pass, like just calling out the mic really starts with the first like set point.
So you're calling his number out?
Yep, calling out his number.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, he's not giving us any secret sauce here.
So there's some big 350-pound nose tackle over you. I mean, and all this is going on at the in real time, right?
Yeah, it all goes in real time, especially when like when we're on the road and we have to go on the silent cadence. Like sometimes I have to make the call. Like then I just put my head between my legs and look for the quarterback's foot to just snap the ball. Sometimes the picture changes when the head goes up.
Speaking of quarterbacks, we're talking with Ryan Nuziel, guys, starting center for Atlanta Falcons. It's Dukes and Bell. Tell us about Penix, man. That connection with you guys. Look, we can make fun of this because we went through a period here, 15, where our center was not getting the ball at the time, Matt Ryan. And we were like, we can't get the ball to the quarterback. So we don't take that lightly. What's that like, the connection with you guys?
No, it's good. Penix is very vocal and very on top of things, so it definitely helps. And then just being able to relay stuff, like if the snap's just a little bit off, just telling me to get it right and get it going.
Talking with Ryan Nuziel, guys, as we mentioned, he is our center. He's a Central Florida guy from Bradenton, from Braden River, so you got to be a good fisherman. Yeah, mangrove snapper?
No, not too much snapper. I mean, just grew up just bass fishing.
Okay,
just a lot of places.
Yeah. And then App State, by the way. Talk about your journey and how you got recruited and how you wound up in Boone.
Yeah, I mean, I was very fortunate up in Boone to get my start there. I started as tight end. They came down and visited me, and they told me probably be better for you to be interior line. But went on a visit there. Absolutely loved App State and just fell in love with the school, the campus, the staff. And it was just like, how bad could it be to start O-line?
Yeah, not a bad future, huh? Yeah. Things worked out. So you got good hands, good feet if you were tight end.
I was probably average, speaking that they did move me to O-line, but I like to think that they were pretty good.
Now, D. Orlando Ledbetter from the AJC, as Ryan Nuziel is with us, guys. He told me a story. You were playing against one of Michael Irvin's kids' teams, and you were playing tight end, and he was talking trash to some DB. Don't let that kid beat you.
Yeah, no, we played like St. Thomas Aquinas out there, and that was one heck of a roster. So they were just star-studded on the defensive side.
Right. Ryan, who's the jokester on this offensive line, man? You got a lot of vets now. I mean, obviously, McGarry is a vet. All of a sudden, like, we look up, he's been here like 6-7 years. Who's the jokester?
It's got to be Bergeron.
Really?
Yeah, he's for sure the jokester. He just keeps things light, entertaining, and, I mean, just keeps it fun.
You've been here a couple of years, and now with camp, we feel like there's an energy, and even the veterans are talking about it. Usually when we ask about playoffs, guys go, we'll take it one game at a time. Seems like there really is a mission now to take it to the next level this season.
I mean, it just seems like every year we just keep building. So this year, I mean, it's definitely looking good, and, I mean, I think we have some good pieces.
Talk about the cohesion with the O-line. We talked to Jake a little bit about this. He was kind of remembering, you know, the line that he was with in 2016 when this team went to the Super Bowl, and he was like, he feels like the group is close that way. Describe that, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, ever since I've been here, Jake, Chris, and Caleb have been here. So it's kind of great just being able to stay with those guys. Then Bergeron going into year three, looking like really comfortable with everyone. And it's just kind of really nice just having the same unit together.
Now's a chance for us to do the good cop, bad cop and spill the tea. Are there any secret plays you can share with us? Something new from Zach Robinson? How explosive is this offense going to be, Ryan Neusel?
Come on!
No, can't do any of that. No, just run the ball, throw the ball, get in the end zone.
But there is a toughness and a mentality about teams that can run the football. And the Falcons have a rep around the league as being that kind of tough team. And now you're a part of that. Is that an attitude you're born with or develops through your coming up through college?
No, it definitely starts with Led, the O-line coach. I mean, just speed off the ball starts there and just being tough, finish, and just kind of just having the edge. When you run the ball, make it count.
Dwayne Ledford, he's talking about the O-line coach here. Ryan Neusel with this guy. He's Dukes and Bell. Speaking of that, you kind of made him have to make a decision, right? I mean, you wouldn't go away. You just kept showing up and making plays and doing what you needed to do. I mean, I find that interesting because some guys maybe get frustrated knowing, all right, maybe I'm not going to get a shot. You don't know what's going to happen. But he speaks highly of you and the motivation you had to make this happen for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it was just step by step every year. Start of the year, my rookie year on practice squad, just trying to do everything I could just to stick around. And then year two, some injuries happened. I was able to get on the active roster, kind of just honestly was the same thing, just giving all the practice looks and just having the chance that I could get in. And then year three, I was fortunate enough to just get some actual playing time and really build on that. And then obviously last year, got some real playing time and just fortunate to be here.
Offensive linemen generally have the rep as being kind of low-key guys, but you know, you get a contract, two-year deal, you got some roots now in the NFL. You buy anything fun for yourself this offseason?
Did buy a house. Yeah, had right. A wedding. So those are the two really big purchases around here. Nothing truly fun yet, no. Solely just working through the house. That's enough.
Right.
Ryan, as we talk about this team, what's your sense? What do you feel? Like, you've been around football all your life. You've been on good teams. What's your sense here with what you've seen so far?
I just think everyone wants to go and get theirs. I mean, everyone's ready to just go out there week one, kind of just get things rolling, and everyone's just hungry.
Well, we appreciate your time, bro. Again, congratulations on the contract, and look forward to seeing you doing all that stuff you've been doing, man. The anchor of our offensive line. By the way, you set any expectations for yourself? Do you believe those PFF rankings, which we don't understand?
No, just trying to finish the year and do great.
All right.
Anything about these scuffles that we've seen? I've got to ask you that. Yeah. Anything? I mean, I know it's just a part of the game, but it's happening a lot out here. Like, it's been fun, but, I mean, like, I think it was Chris Lindstrom said yesterday, it's elevating guys. How do you sense what goes on in the trenches there?
Yeah, I mean, it's just camp scuffles. Happens everywhere. But, obviously, when a few of those break out, then it's like, okay, this next play, like, we got to go on both sides right. of the ball. Like, can't have, like, a little scuffle break out, and then everyone's, like, elevated, and then one side really beats up on the other next play. Everyone gets a little elevated, you said.
And Coach Rod takes care of his starters in the preseason. Are you looking forward to, I presume, seeing the Titans? And that's some of these scrimmages, these in-week workouts with the Titans, seem like that's where we're really going to see some physicality and see guys really establish themselves.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have a good D-line up front, so it'll definitely be a dogfight up there.
Ryan Neusel, man, good luck. Appreciate you stopping by, brother. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That is our new Falcons center there, Ryan Neusel, with some good stuff. I think he's going to be just fine. I don't think the Falcons have anything to worry about there. He played well in 9 games last year, and there's no reason to say that he can't do it again. Why not? All right, coming up next, we're going to get to a producer six-pack with Oren Romain. Excited to do one of these. Haven't done one of these in a while. We'll do that. We'll let you hear from Caleb Johnson, who joined the show earlier, and Divine Diablo as well, who was on the radio station with Andy and Randy. So a busy, busy final hour of the program. We'll keep you posted on the Braves as well. They're losing. Shocker. And we'll get to that and a whole lot more. Busy, busy final hour of the program. 9 o'clock hour straight ahead. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.